Welcome to the B Show.
The B Show.
The B Show.
A wrestling podcast.
Welcome to the B Show, a wrestling podcast. Big Smoothie's not able to join us this week. He had a little bit of a family thing come up, so it's me, Fancy J, L.A.J., Lamarck, or whatever you want to call him.
Hello, hello. I am here, live.
Yes, you are.
Yes.
So, lots happening in the world of professional wrestling, and I think we dive right in because I just want to get your reaction on this because I think you're going to be a little bit surprised, but I've actually enjoyed WWE since WrestleMania.
Look at that.
Yeah, it's weird what happens when you actually put storylines in place and build guys up. It becomes compelling television. Like, I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say the rash of injuries might have ruined WrestleMania, but it's certainly making the post-Mania push towards what would be the next big pay-per-view, which is SummerSlam, look really, really viable and like something that I'm probably going to be interested in seeing. I mean, when you're bringing up guys like Apollo Crews and Baron Corbin and Sami Zayn and Doc Gallows and Carl Anderson, and you're actually pushing them forward on TV, and we'll get to pushing them forward on TV because I know a lot of people are bitching about Sami Zayn continually losing, but I think they're not familiar with the product enough to understand what comes next.
Exactly.
So I'm actually pretty excited.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great time to be, you know, an indie fan like us and being able to see it on the main stage. I mean, yeah, WrestleMania was disappointing as far as the booking, the storylines, some of the, you know, the results. But, you know, at the end of the day, they made the most they've ever made on a Mania, the most gate, the most revenue. So it was a huge success for them. So to see them still make this change is encouraging. They could have just continued down the same road. What I also love is, like you're saying, clean finishes. There's a point to who's winning and who's losing and where it's going to go, whether it's the pay-per-view or future feuds. That's nice. The heel GMs not being out there and dictating every single segment. And basically, you know, it's one storyline per Raw, beginning, middle, end, and everything in between is just a bunch of mush. It doesn't really matter. Yeah, filler. So it's nice to see that. I guess Shane O'Mac is back officially because he's in the new opener. They had the same music, but they cut a new opener. So, and he's featured in that.
Do you also notice there's a really quick, like not even 1 second long jump cut of Seth Rollins in there?
I noticed that.
Yeah,
they're putting he's supposedly coming back at the beginning of the summer. So we'll see. You know, yeah, it's a fun time, man. And you know, as far as who the main people are getting pushed to, you know, for this main event. The buildup for the new pay-per-view is more exciting than it was for Mania.
Yeah, because there's new pieces in place.
Yep.
You know, it's not the same tired old thing. And then part two of this too, and I'm just going to say it because it's the truth. AJ's getting his push because he's selling merch. I think that was a dude that was brought in as a coup to kind of, based on his Japanese stuff and the network expanding into Japan, they wanted to be able to use him. They wanted to be able to use Nakamura. They wanted to be able to use Itami to get these Japanese fans. Then you grab Anderson and Gallows. But I think what Vince didn't realize is the American audience that AJ also appeals to, just based on the fact that he works indies throughout the entire country. TNA was a big TV presence back when AJ was in his first prime.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? So, like, he comes in, he starts selling merch, and Vince is like, ooh, well, this guy does belong at the top of the card.
Yeah, I mean, what's great about AJ is that he has, besides WWE, he wrestled in every major, you know, wrestling company in the States and pretty much outside, you know. So if you were an ROH fan, you saw AJ. If you knew Japan, saw AJ. TNA, saw AJ.
Even Mexican feds.
Exactly. So, I mean, he was all over the place. So everybody got a little bit of taste of him. He's awesome in the ring. He's selling the most merch. He gets major pops, one of the biggest pops every single week he comes out. So, you know, and then you kind of, is he or isn't he storyline right now with Gallows and Anderson.
I have a weird theory.
Which is fun, too. It adds a new dimension to him as well.
I have a weird theory about this.
All right, what do you think they're going to do with him?
I have a weird, weird, weird feeling that this is all set up so that Roman can turn, take Gallows and Anderson under his wing, And then there's this weird thing where he determines that the Usos weren't really having his back and that this is his new family. And then that leads to Ambrose getting involved because, remember, they were the family as well.
Yeah.
And then it ends up being Reigns and then Anderson and Gallows along with Samoa Joe or Finn Balor.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other side of it, you've got AJ, the Usos, and either Finn Balor or Samoa Joe based on who's the heel and who's the face when they come to the main roster.
You know, somebody mentioned that too, and that makes sense because the entire time that you saw those two being boys with AJ, I was like, this is a little too obvious. There's got to be something more to it. But I don't know how I feel about that, if that means AJ's teaming up with the Usos, because they're just as boring as Reigns is right now. I mean, it's the same shtick week in, week out for a couple years now. I'd love to be able to see, you know, that.
But do you remember the heel Usos?
Do I remember the heel is?
Yeah.
No.
When the Usos were heel.
No. Oh, so you're saying if AJ and Usos go, they're going to be heels?
Oh, yeah.
So what will make AJ heel if Roman has those two on his side and they help defeat AJ? How does Roman stay face?
It's a good question, but everything that's pertained to Roman up to this point hasn't really made sense.
No. No, it hasn't. I just feel like he would just still continue to get booed. And, you know, I guess
and
my
the boo birds are strong. There was no piping in on Monday night.
No.
Those were legitimate boos.
And that's in another country. So wherever this dude is going, he's getting booed.
Yeah.
So it's not just like, oh, okay, Mark City of Chicago or Philly, you know, New York. It is, you know, whether we're in England or, you know, Scotland or whatever, the dude is getting booed. It'll be interesting. I agree with you. I feel like it was a little on the nose with those guys. But that's what I'm excited about for this pay-per-view in the main event. It leaves something up. So even if the result is Roman wins, what happens within that match and all these other side parties, you know, can help determine the next direction. So.
Well, the other thing that I think a lot of people don't remember, too, is that AJ has a history with Tyler Black, who became Seth Rollins. And with Rollins set to return, you may see Rollins be the catalyst for
that. I didn't know that. And what? In
Ring of Honor.
Ring of Honor? That would be awesome. See, now that I could get behind, where he, you know, maybe it's a Rollins, Ambrose, you know, AJ kind of forming something to go against those guys.
I don't ever want to see them try and do like a recreation of the Shield.
No.
I would prefer that they take the League of Nations route and try and create what would be considered like a new Four Horsemen.
Yeah, that would be great. I heard League of Nations they're breaking them up.
Well,
which makes sense.
Yeah, it was pointless to begin with, and it all boils down to merch sales. Like, those shirts weren't selling.
I know, they're pretty cool shirts.
Well, they'll be in the Shop Zone discount center soon.
Yeah, I mean, but they were kind of, you know, they were boring together. There wasn't anything that separated them or made you want to watch.
They needed a mouthpiece.
Yeah.
They needed a girl. And they needed to break them off into a definitive, you two are the tag team.
Mm-hmm.
You're going after the main title. You're going after the secondary title. That's how the Four Horsemen worked.
Yeah.
And that's how it should always kind of work. You know what I mean? Like,
well, that's how DX, when they were together, how that even Nation of Domination, they would have different levels and people trying to go after the belt. So, yeah, absolutely. I think it's interesting because we're all excited about these new matches and, you know, the new people they're bringing up and the direction that they're going. But then you have those guys in the League of Nations. I mean, where do you put those guys? Like, where do you send them? Are they now all mid-carders?
I think Rusev has an upside because you can have him work as a monster heel again.
He feels like he's in the doghouse with everything with Lana.
Lana's fault, though.
I know, but unfortunately, I mean, they made him look like a punk when The Rock came back and was making comments about Lana. He just stood there and took it. Rusev is one of my favorites on the roster, and he's not doing anything. I mean, he came out and had a match on Raw, which was nice. It was, you know, it was just him, but I don't see a major push for him in the future. But then again, like, and we'll go further with this, you know, down the road with Sami Zayn. That's kind of what they do. They push him in the back for a long time and then, okay, here you go.
And Sheamus to me has always been one of those weird talents that I just don't care about.
Yeah.
He's solid, but he's not great. You know what I mean?
I don't think anybody in the WWE universe cares about him.
No, I mean,
he was your champ 4 months ago, by the way.
Oh yeah,
I mean that's how far he has fallen down.
Yeah, well, he's always been just so paper thin and one dimensional. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's just I'm this Irish guy, and you get your ass kicked backstage by Kalisto. And
well, that's the thing, when he came out of his when he was a face, he would just pound his chest, say the same thing. When he was heel, he just had a couple extra squinchies in his beard,
yeah,
and did the exact same thing. I actually liked him when he went suit for a few weeks with the corporate and had he had a little different dimension to his character, but that was just dropped immediately because he became part of the League of Nations. So I don't know, man. To me, it's kind
of
like... The
guy I feel the worst for is Del Rio, because truthfully, at his age, to be in the best shape of his career and to not be utilized properly just sucks. Because like the SmackDown match with him and AJ, I thought was fire.
Yeah, no, he's awesome. Great shape. I mean, easily the best tan on the roster by everybody. I mean, dude comes out and he's looking tanner every week. But
he's Mexican, bro.
I know, man, but that's a little extra tan than the
well,
Mexican
think about where
shade.
They've been, too. I mean, they've been on the West Coast and California. And
but he looks like the complete package for whatever 100%. It is with Del Rio, and there's just been a disconnect with the fans. I think that if you're really going to want to change him up, he's got to go face. I feel like he's done the heel.
He sucked as a face, though.
But maybe that's going to be the connection, or at least give him a run that we think he deserves. But right now at heel, it's nobody cares.
They need to go back and realize what worked for Del Rio, which was being the Mexican version of JBL. You got to bring the limo. You got to get Ricardo Rodriguez back.
Yeah.
I mean, those were the things that really made that gimmick fun and then didn't really take away from his ring in-ring, which I think right now is he's in his prime. I think he's got another 18 months in him where he could work at this level and stay injury free. And if they squander it, man, that would suck.
Why did they get rid of Ricardo?
I think he got busted with fake weed.
Fake weed or something. And then that's the reason why they never brought him back?
Pretty much.
I mean, because he was good in the ring too, as far as taking bumps for a manager,
Well, he wrestled under a hood with the whole suit in NXT.
Yeah. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what they do. And I just feel like they're going with the new blood under Shane's regime and kind of giving those guys filler matches. And right now,
well, I think a big part of this, and we talked about this, touched on it last week, is they're building all these guys up in the absence of the guys that are hurt so that when they come back, they can do the brand split.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, because Apollo Crews is basically just the new Neville, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he's definitely on the low on the totem pole as far as the new people coming up.
Well, he's not nearly
push.
He might have that body, but homeboy's 5'8".
Yeah, he's a little guy. I mean, he's jacked, but
he's short.
Yeah, at least he's winning.
Yeah,
glad that they're bringing him up winning. I know he's not having a major storyline like these other call-ups have been, but at least
he's
winning.
They're emulating the Neville push from last year.
That would be a badass match.
I would love to see the two of them go at it.
That would be badass. What was he as what was that? U Nation
on the Indies? He was UHA Nation.
UHA Nation. Was he heel or?
Depending on where he works.
Depending
on. That's kind of how the indies are. It's a matchup city by city kind of thing.
Was he wasn't in ROH or anything, right? I never saw him in there.
No. But there are rumors that Cedric Alexander, ACH from Ring of Honor, their contracts are both coming up and both have expressed interest in having a tryout.
They would kill it.
ACH especially.
ACH would be awesome.
Cedric Alexander to me would just be the new Titus O'Neil kind of thing, you know what I mean? Yeah. You got a big dude that you can squash every once in a while.
Who made a comeback? Titus O'Neil getting in a little
anti-smoking commercial.
Yeah, look at that. That's his first comeback, saying, "Hey, welcome back to the company."
Oh, well.
Your girl Natty, though. I mean, she's making some money on all those promos for other companies. That's nice, man. Sponsorship deals for her.
Natalya is looking better and better.
Yeah.
As time progresses.
Well, let's get into that match because I know you're not the. I wouldn't say a fan of, but you're not one that tunes in for the women's wrestling on WWE.
I fast forward through it.
There you go. So right now we have Charlotte and Natty match at the pay-per-view, and it looks like Bret Hart, Uncle Bret's going to come out and be in her corner.
Step uncle.
Pretty much the exact storyline in NXT, which I think is smart because the masses haven't seen it. It was a really good story down in NXT, so it's nice that they're letting it breathe for a couple of months here on the main roster. So are you at least excited for that you can see?
No,
Brett,
I was never
Rick
a big Bret Hart fan.
No, but I mean, like, you get to see your girl. You love Natty. So, like, here you get to see her shine.
I'd rather just look at her. I mean, she, to me, she's the best female worker on the E roster, in my opinion, because she has the best ability to sell with the facial expressions. Her offense is believable. I mean, she gets a little campy with her rah-rah, like, charge-up spots, but, like, baby faces are supposed to kind of be a little goofy, you know, in certain aspects. But I just don't like Charlotte. I don't think she's as good as everybody says she is.
Good as in wrestling skills?
Yeah.
Really? Now, why is that? What? Because you have people that, you know, like you have been involved in wrestling or watch wrestling weekly their whole life who think that, you know, she's the next great thing, the best female athlete that they've seen forever. So why do you not think that she is good in the ring?
She can't lead the match, which if you're the champ, you should be at a level where you are the person leading the match.
Now, how do you know she can't lead the match?
Because I've seen it happen.
Because you see the other person.
Because I see there being no fluidity a lot of times, especially when there's three of those broads in the ring together. Oh, my God. It's like watching a monkey try and hump three footballs. It's just the worst thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
You can't say that that Mania match was the best on the card.
No, I disagree.
In-ring wrestling, best on the card. What was better? The ladder match was amazing.
Jericho AJ?
No. They had so many slow parts in that, and we were talking about it. Jericho couldn't keep up with AJ. That for the first time I agreed with you. It wasn't slow.
But suspension of disbelief, AJ and Chris Jericho was a better match than the three-way with the broads. Because, dude, it's women. Just whatever, women, broads.
I'll be the vocal piece.
You can be the feminist on the show.
I mean, don't get me wrong.
On the show. It's just not as good. It boils down to this, is when you go back to what I consider to be the golden age of wrestling, which is pre-Hogan winning the title, and you look at women's wrestling then, and you had girls like Judy Martin and the Fabulous Moolah, and Wendi Richter, and Penny, and all of these other girls. Mm-hmm. They weren't trying to do what the guys were doing. They were kind of punch, punch, kick, sunset flip, this, the basics. And it was believable because at that point, they weren't trying to do anything that made them look stupid, awkward, or miss on live TV. And now you fast forward to this era of girls that are all trying to do this high-flying, acrobatic, indie style of wrestling. And quite frankly, most of them can't pull it off. And when they are trying to pull it off, they're in the ring with another girl that's also trying to do the spot monkey BS. And it just ends up being this mess of junk.
Okay, so, but because if you're comparing it to the, you know, 60s, 70s.
I'm talking like late 70s, early 80s. Yeah.
So, but you could say that about every sport. You could say that about women's basketball. Let's use that as an example. What women were doing in the late 70s, early 80s compared to what they're doing now.
They weren't playing basketball in the late 70s, early 80s.
Well, they were. They were doing it in high school. They had college teams, but they weren't.
But there was no WNBA. There was no.
But they weren't as gifted of an athlete. And that's, I think, where you've seen the progression for women, and they're able to do this stuff. And plus, I mean, I guess maybe Charlotte does some stuff off the top rope. I mean, her moonsault, the Mania, was badass. But, I mean, like Sasha, Becky, I mean, you know, even what's her face down in NXT, the champ.
Bailey.
I always want to say Emma. Emma, they don't usually go on the top rope that. I mean, it's usually
I'm not talking like that kind of stuff, but just like when they're trying to do like the high flying in ring stuff, the cross bodies, like the tilt-a-whirl backbreaker that the one tries to pull off. And like, I don't know, it's clunky to me. It doesn't work the same way that the men's matches do. I equate the girls in WWE to the Vince model of hiring El Gigante. You know what I mean? Is, oh, cool, they're super athletic because they were a cheerleader or they were a fitness model or they were this. Professional wrestling, and I'm going to call it professional wrestling because that's what it is part athletic and part acting. And the girls either are super athletic and can't pull off the acting, or they're super really good at the acting, which none of them really are, and really bad at the athletic. You know what I mean? Like, it's getting better, but I still think that there's a long way to go as far as women's wrestling goes, and there being compelling competitive matches.
Yeah, I'm not trying to
because
say
for me,
you're wrong. I'm just trying to understand where you come from. Did you like Trish or Lita?
See, that's the era that I was going to point to where there was actually good in-ring action. When you had Trish and Mickie James and Lita, and then Molly Holly. To me, those were the four women that if you're going to emulate an era with the girls that we have now, emulate those girls so that one girl is the high flyer, one girl is the power girl, one girl is the scientific thing. The thing with these girls is none of them have a specific point of view for a style. And then when you get them all in the ring, it becomes this clusterfuck.
I agree with you with that, and I think a lot of that has to do with how they're booked, because in NXT, each of them did have their own individual style that they could showcase in the match. So it was a lot more fluid than it is up on the main roster. 100% agree with you there. I think what has tainted you and probably a lot of other fans, listeners out there, is that the last 10 to 13 years, you know, pretty much since Trish left and Lita and Mickie James went to TNA and all that, has been, okay, let's get some hot models in there. Let's do a diva search. Let's just get beautiful women in bikinis and just have them hit pillows with each other. I think that it's going, not that I think, I believe that it is going back to the Trish, Lita, where you're getting.
I agree, but I don't think that they've got potential there. I think we're halfway there. I think there's still a long way to go. And the other thing that I'm going to point to.
Well, you got to get more than just three. You have to have more on the roster than just the three that they showcase. So.
And part of why, and I don't really want to throw this broad under the bus because she's a sweetheart, but I don't think Sara Del Rey is doing as good a job as Fit Finley did with these girls.
Interesting, because she's the one that gets all of the credit.
I know. But by the same token, we have yet to see any more than three girls from her era at NXT. So I'm willing to give her a shot, only because I know how talented she is. And I also know that she has the umbrella of falling under Cesaro, because that's her real life boo. Yeah. So the two of them together, I think he can help her and then she can help the divas down. But I think they need to stop focusing on pretty girls. Let's be honest. I mean,
you lost me. Wait, Lana and Cesaro are dating?
Not Lana.
Or what?
Sara Del Rey. They've been together forever.
What?
Yeah.
A little Us Weekly here.
Yeah.
On the podcast.
It was Claudio. When Cesaro was Claudio, she was Sara Del Rey
and
in the
Indies.
When
he
was
down
together,
there.
Yeah. I think they're still together.
All right. Back to your point. I was lost there for a moment.
All right. So I think if, just like the guys, man, and this is the thing that frustrates me the most, is as happy as I am with the product right now, I think that there is a severe lack of attention to detail paid to what has worked in the past. Because if we're going back and we're looking at them doing all of these recycled things, whether it's the groups like the Attitude Era, or you know, trying to create a women's division a la that post-Attitude Era with what I call the TLC Era of the Hardys and the Dudleys and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. I think that if there was more attention paid to the details of the fact that, like, the bad guy or bad girl doesn't have to be attractive or have that perfect Vince body in order to be effective in their role. So for me, the reason I'm gravitating towards an Awesome Kong or an ODB is because they both do the heel thing fantastically. And it's not in a stereotypical Barbie sort of way. The reason that you fear Awesome Kong is because she could eat three of these divas for lunch. You know what I mean? Like, and ODB is just a big burly broad. So for them to only hire these model types and they don't understand why nobody's really connecting as a heel and why Charlotte's out there getting woos. And it's just like, look, you're doing this wrong. Like, if you want her to actually be the heel, you've got to have her work against her dad, who is one of the most respected names in the history of wrestling. The reason that nobody ever really gets into the women's thing or rallies around one specific girl is because it never feels like there's peril. It never feels like when Earthquake showed up and squashed Hulk Hogan in the snake pit.
I remember that as a kid, man.
Yeah. So imagine if they brought in an ODB or an Awesome Kong or some other girl that is unknown.
But your point, which is 100% on point, and I agree with it, is also with the men. Like, this roster is missing that Abdullah the Butcher or King Kong Bundy or Earthquake.
Yeah.
Those bigger than, like, Yokozuna, like these big dudes. And so when you put even a Hogan, you know, going against, they made Earthquake. You look back on, you know,
John Tenta, one of the absolute abysmal worst workers of all time. But that dude was a threat as Earthquake because Hogan made him a threat.
Exactly.
Because Hogan let him get over.
And you look at it and I'm like, why did I ever think that Hogan would lose to this guy?
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree with you. And I think that, you know, hopefully with the way the getting these indie wrestlers up on, keeping them up on the main roster, keeping their same names, acknowledging New Japan, acknowledging where they have been, it's a different way than what has been happening
for
the last
15
years.
But how do you let a dude like Bull Dempsey walk away? How do you let a dude that looks like Bull Dempsey walk away when he's a big bodied, good, bad guy? You know what I mean? Not, you know, he does well at being a bad guy.
Because, I, you know, at some point he just became the jobber to get over somebody in NXT. And so if you're not going to be able to
his feud with Baron Corbin was fantastic.
Yeah.
And I think he
deserved. But a lot of Baron Corbin has a lot of haters too. I mean, a lot of people didn't think that he would ever be able to make a positive, you know, entrance onto the main roster and weren't sure.
Well, that's because he's ugly, but he has the Vince body. I'm talking about a dude like Beer City Bruiser.
Yeah.
Who is essentially a fat guy who wrestles in old-fashioned trunks and boots, looks like a fat guy, but can do a plancha and miss the top rope. You know what I mean? Like, he can do the big plancha to the outside, like, as well as Kalisto can, but at 6'4 and 375 pounds.
Yeah, I'm just hoping that within the next couple of years, you're going to start to see the change. You know, what used to be you had to have the jacked up muscles and steroids and veiny to be the champion now is going to guys like Rollins and giving AJ
Styles. Rollins is
a
CrossFitter, man. He's also got the Vince body. AJ has the Vince body. I'm talking about taking dudes like Kevin Owens.
Oh, I agree
with you. Not forcing them to work in a t-shirt. I mean, they put Bo Dallas in a singlet because they said he was getting too chubby to wear trunks on TV.
But going to Owens, he's always worn a shirt. At least since I'm not saying in every single indie he has, but for the most part, he's always had a shirt on. That's always kind of his style.
Absolutely. But you know, but you got to understand that it's very different for Vince to let him continue to do what he did on the indies.
You watch ROH. Who's the really big, heavy-set dude that is wrestling with that company right now?
That's Beer City Bruiser.
Okay. Does he is that what it, I think it was?
Tim and Silas Young.
And he wrestles without a shirt on?
Yeah.
Okay. So do you think that the reason why he – do you think that he has the ability to make an impression and be a focal point and be a heel on a WWE roster?
If allowed to be the character that he is, absolutely, because he pays homage to Dick the Bruiser, the original.
Can that character fall into the WWE universe?
Yes, because this is a dude that should
I'm only asking because,
this is a dude that should be shirtless in his trunks, doing his backstage interview with a lit cigar in his mouth and the weird little paperboy hat on with the one squinty eye looking into the camera saying that I'm going to come and I'm going to kick your ass in Cleveland. You know, like, I'm the Bruiser. You know what I mean? Because that stuff works.
But how many are those? Exactly. I agree with you. But how many of those guys are even out there on the indie market that could make, that could be the next Kevin Owens or could be a Kevin Owens-esque in the sense of body-wise, but could be an Earthquake or Yokozuna or those guys that we saw? I mean,
there's
how many,
a few guys. I mean,
just a few, though, because every time I'm watching ROH,
Beer City's one that comes to mind. I mean, I think the other guy that would work on there's two guys that came through 2CW that I think would definitively work on TV as the characters they portray now. One is Dick Justice. It's a comedy act. It's a comedy cop. It's funny. He doesn't need to be good in the ring. And he could be a Santino-style jobber while also still super over based on the gimmick.
Yeah.
The other dude is Brute Van Slyke, who did a stint in Japan. Big dude, emulates like a cross between Stan Hansen and Bruiser Brody, so to speak. Big body, not a fat guy, but definitely a dude that doesn't have that ripped cut sort of, you know, he kind of, in a weird way, is a more filled out Luke Harper. It's okay. Luke Harper with a definitive amount of thick, like, strongman style muscle as opposed to, like, well, for lack of a better way to put it, like bodybuilder style.
But a lot of those guys that we're talking about that have wrestled in WWE in the past, they all would wear a one piece or have some. I mean, even Andre even was partially covered in his later years. And Earthquake had the one piece with the straps and would take the straps off. So in a way, they're still. I mean, Yokozuna, that was part of his character.
Well, he had the sumo style.
Exactly. So, I mean, he didn't have the shirt on or, you know, One Piece. So,
but look at Umaga, look at Rikishi, look at, you know.
But
what I mean?
You're talking about people that have a certain nationality, and they're different than the classic fat white guy that comes in and beats everybody up and is a bruiser.
I mean,
even those guys back then didn't have the Vince muscle builder body, but they still covered him up in a way, but made him a threat.
To a degree. And you have to, you know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things where, like, it only works for certain guys.
Yeah.
And for me, for Beer City, I think it works. I think that's the dude on the indie circuit right now. Super high on, he's Ring of Honor, but I still consider that indie.
I think the reason why Bull didn't work, though, is because he doesn't have the size that you're talking about. I'm not saying he's not a great worker, and I'm not saying he couldn't have great feet.
He wasn't tall enough. If he was four inches taller, it would have been...
Oh, yeah, it would have been lights out. He'd probably already be up.
Yeah.
And so with that, you know, they very rarely have short, fat guys.
Yeah.
So, all right, so here's a question for you.
Shoot.
What do you think is going on with Taker? He's now officially, last time we said, okay, they pulled out, then we ended the podcast, and then we said, okay, he's going back on two shows now. Then he dropped those again. So now he's officially done. He's not out there. Do you think that he's going to retire that way?
No.
Or do you think that...
No, there's something coming. There's no way a dude of Taker's magnitude walks away completely clean like this with no hubbub, no... anything. As much as he's a team player, he's not a dude that's going to go out quietly. So what do you think is going to happen with Taker moving forward now?
All right, so this is my prediction. And if I am the Taker and I'm retiring, and if I'm Vince, this is what I would want. He started his career in WWE in Survivor Series. He ends his career with a big Survivor Series match. And then they announce... he's retiring, and he's going into the Hall of Fame in Orlando next year, where they're opening up the brand new Hall of Fame building, and he is the big one, the big attraction to get everybody to go there and to kick off, you know, the Hall. So that to me makes sense rather than completely walk away. I can't see him doing another Mania match. I mean, he did a lot this past, you know, a couple weeks ago, but at the same time, he didn't. I felt like he looked better SummerSlam or Survivor Series in those matches than he did in Mania. I just think that to me would be the perfect way to go out for him, give the fans one more opportunity to see him. He gets his love, his cheers, and then, you know, off to the Hall of Fame.
I don't know, man. Like, I stopped caring about The Undertaker about 10 years ago.
I agree with you.
You know what I mean? Like, I've never really been a huge fan of his because, frankly, like, you know, the demon gimmick of, like, taking everybody's finisher and then sitting up just used to piss me off as a kid. And then you get into, like, that mid-era that I know Smoothie loves with the American Badass and the biker and everything else. But you can't do the biker gimmick and the sit-up gimmick. You know what I mean? Like,
Did he have the sit-up gimmick during the biker gimmick? Yeah, I agree with you. I mean,
there were a couple of things that he did that I thought were really cool, like the whole thing with him putting Jeff Hardy over, the whole thing with him putting Maven over. That was cool because Taker does respect the business, but by the same token, man, like, I get that you can't go from dead man to a regular guy character. I get that, but, like, I think at that point, once he got to a certain sort of... I don't know, the character sort of jumped the shark, and at that point, I think you either have to continue to do the gimmicky stuff and continue to work with gimmick opponents, or you've got to stay as far away from the title as possible. But they continued to push him towards the title picture as this goofy character in an era where it wasn't believable.
Yeah, and I mean, dude, our listeners are going to hate you and I. I have never been a Taker, like, super fan, like the super Mark.
Don't get me wrong. Like,
he's awesome.
We all respect him and
absolutely
what he's contributed to the business in the maturity and leadership role that he stepped into in the locker room is second to none.
Absolutely.
We're specifically talking about ring work and the believability of a character throughout a 30-year career.
Especially these last 10 or 12 years. I mean, everybody talks about the matches with Shawn Michaels or with Triple H. Like, I never was that guy that was like, oh, I get to see Taker and I want to see him extend the streak. It felt like it was the same thing over and over again. My most enjoyable time was when he was when he had his staple, the Ministry.
Oh, the Ministry of Darkness.
Ministry of Darkness. I loved that, even though it was super cheesy and putting But again, who was it? Stone Cold up on the cross as they
It wasn't a cross. It was a symbol.
On the symbol. That was that was my most favorite time of the of Undertaker. But yeah, these last 10 years, I just feel it's a novelty act, and you're just holding on. And unless he's going to be going against the Kevin Owens and putting them over, I just don't see what he's personally what he brings to a pay per view card.
For me, the things that stand out for me, the things that I liked with Taker, were the fake Undertaker angle with Brian Lee.
Yeah, that was. I remember that.
The matches with Kane, the initial feud with Kane, yep. First mm-hmm. couple of years, because they're big, both unbelievable, supernatural characters that had work rate
and great athletes.
And you could believe that these two monsters were really tearing each other mm-hmm. apart. I liked the Yokozuna Undertaker angle.
Oh wow,
yeah, that was good when they put him in the casket, and yep. it took like 20 bad guys to do it, and then he rose, and yeah. you know what I mean. I didn't mind the whole like Ministry of Darkness era because he was out of the ring quite a bit. He was in a talking role. He was more of a manager than a wrestler, and it was cool because like despite the fact that Undertaker was untouchable, the guys he had with him, whether it was Midian or Viscera or Gangrel, would take the loss.
Yeah.
And you're keeping that loss away from Taker, which exactly. I think extended him in a time where he really needed that.
Yep.
But beyond that, I can't think of much other than when he was Mean Mark Callis that I really care about.
Yeah, I mean, he has a streak. And you and I are definitely in the minority on this. Everybody loves him. Everybody was shocked when he lost. I mean, I was even shocked when he lost. But to me, it just, I'm not geeked up for that match or, oh gosh, he's going to be on Survivor Series or he's going to be in SummerSlam.
Yeah, I never cared.
Like, I just don't care. I love what he does for the guys behind the scenes and who you read and hear about and how he, mentors the talent and, smacks them around. You hear stories from Mark Henry and these guys who came in
yeah.
and how he pulled them aside and said, this is not how you do it and write the ship for these guys. So I love that. It's just the character. It's just the same thing. And then the 15-minute freaking entrance to the ring every time he comes out, it gets a little boring. And now he just says one sentence, eyes roll back in the head, and then the crowd
you
pops.
Will rest in peace.
Gosh, I was so hoping Shane put the 1-2-3 on him.
Yeah, it is what it is, man.
So he's out. And then this whole Shane thing, nobody knows, like literally no one knows.
It's leading towards the brand split. And this is what I want to suggest. Cause we're both kind of back into the E product. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like I've spent some time with it. Next week, let's you and I, and we'll have Smooth moderate
yep.
if he's able to come back next week. I would like you and I to draft the first 10 picks.
Ooh.
Doesn't matter. You can have your pick of brand, and I'll even give you first pick. But what we need to do is we'll go back and forth. So essentially, what we'll be doing is creating the top 20 guys in WWE, yep. and then I want you,
okay,
the following week to tell me how you're going to book your 10 guys.
All right. So
and I'll do the same.
10 draft picks. And then once we know who is on our roster, then we go and book the
storylines.
Well,
it's not going to be your whole roster.
No, but
it's going to be your top tier.
In order to book it, that's considered our 10-man roster. All right, now I get the number one draft pick?
You get the number one pick, and you can either be Raw or SmackDown.
People that are injured but are coming back.
Yes.
Okay.
You cannot take from the NXT roster.
Yep.
And tag teams are individuals, not tag teams, so you can't get two dudes with one pick. So, like, you couldn't pick the Ascension. You know what I mean?
Well, okay. So basically, pretty much a tag team you're not going to put on because that takes two of your 10 unless it's
maybe
the main one. So no Finn Balor, nobody that's 10 or Samoa Joe, nobody that's on
correct
down there.
It's got to be.
Oh man, the wheels are already turning. I love this. And in the next couple of weeks, we're going to be we're going to have some segments from each one of us, to fill these not dead time, but it's dead time.
Yeah, I'll figure out something that I'd like to do. I know Smooth's got an idea. We know you're going to do something centering around The Rock. So,
No. I'll pitch you my segment right now. I mean, it'll be simple. It's going to be quick.
Why so and so isn't as good as The Rock was?
No. I mean,
movies I wish I co-starred in with The Rock.
First of all, that would be the quickest one-time segment ever because nobody would ever be better than The Rock.
That's
right. And the answer for a movie would be everything, especially this new Baywatch movie. With all those honeys in there, be in that in a second on the jet ski, punching Zac Efron in the face, cruising with The Rock.
Oh, God.
That's how I roll, baby. Woo! Finally. Yeah, that's right. L.A. Mark is marking out for The Rock. Is there anything else? TNA.
Oh, yeah, we should talk about TNA.
We should do this. So you know a little bit about these guys, so I'm going to
say
this.
I'm going to say this, and I'm not a TNA fan. I haven't been for a while. But as a wrestling fan, it's tough to wish a wrestling company ill will. And it would suck if TNA were no longer to exist, because that's one less breeding ground, so to speak, for young talent to have before they make the big jump to the universe. So rumor has it now that Dixie has had her dad kind of cut off the financial flow to TNA because it's just hemorrhaging money. Yeah. And then there's, what's the company called?
I got it right here. Keep talking and I'll...
It's Ron and Don Harris, who you may remember. They were in WWE's Creative Control. They were the tag team that got in some trouble for having those Nazi SS tattoos back in the day. They're twin brothers. They were there for the initial launch of TNA. They were in WWE. They were in WCW. These are guys that have made the rounds, mostly in part to being tight with Jeff Jarrett.
Arlo Lux or Arrow Lux?
Arrow Lux is the company that Ron and Don Harris are involved with, that spotted TNA some money that they needed to catch up so that they could do their last TV tapings, pay some talent. But what Dixie didn't realize was in the contract that if they missed a payment back to Arrow Lux, that Arrow Lux became the 51% owners of TNA. And uh-oh, TNA missed their first payment.
Yeah, and Pop took off their second replay of their weekly show, of their big show.
Well, it wasn't even getting ratings.
Exactly. So, but that's how it started on the other station last year, right around the same time. This Arrow Lux is a production / marketing company out of Tennessee, so we'll see.
Well, they're based out of Nashville. I mean, they do some legitimate TV shows, mostly reality-based, but with Ron and Don Harris there, all I really see this being is a way for Jeff Jarrett to get his hands back on TNA and for the global thing to kind of take its place.
So you think Jeff has a hand in the cookie
jar
with these guys?
I definitely think that there's some backdoor action happening with Jeff Jarrett, and it's not with Karen Angle.
Well, she's pretty fine too. And they have their tapings happening in Florida, and they told all their talent that they will continue on. Don't trust the internet, and they will get paid.
But why are guys like Bobby Roode and Eric Young leaving? You know what I mean? Like, why are the guys that have been there since day one suddenly jumping ship when they is recently as a month ago said, "Well, I'm TNA for life."
Listen, it's been a sinking ship for years. They have to do a whole new brand change. Well, you got to get rid of the TNA name.
That's what
you
got to
rebrand it. Come up with a different type of niche than just being what they've been.
If they had a different name from day one, I would guarantee you they would at least, at the very least, be on a Viacom network. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
An M2, a Spike, something. But when you say TNA, you're thinking tits and ass, right?
Absolutely. And I don't know how anybody who comes in and buys TNA can make a profit. Well, can even make a profit. I mean, it's
you can make a profit. You can, because
long term, but initially you're going to lose your TV contract. They've already lost it twice. Dixie has ran in the ground, and unless she steps away, I just don't see how TNA can be successful.
It's not 100% her. It's the people that she's got involved. It's a lot of the writers. It's a lot of the production. I think when you go in and you just sweepingly fire everybody. You know what I mean? Like, I would keep.
I'm sure they will.
I would keep a lot of the wrestling talent, and I would keep.
You have to, because there's no big free agents out there.
I would keep Shane Helms.
Yeah,
because he seems like the segments that he's producing for TNA are the best segments on the show.
Agreed.
I would cut loose a lot of the talent that's in my opinion overpaid, and I would then take the model. As much as this pains me to say it, the model that Triple H made with NXT, and that's how you go forward with this new product, is you come up with a cool new name for it. You somehow sneak America in there because, you know, everybody loves to support America. You know what I mean?
Put like, in Florida, all the Republicans.
No, it could be as simple as calling it American Championship Wrestling and you're the ACW Heavyweight Champion. But ACW sounds an awful lot more like a wrestling company than TNA. Total nonstop action. That could be anything. It could be rodeo. It could be crash 'em up derbies. It could be wrestling. It's not wrestling. But if you go in there and you take the four or five names and recognizable talents that you have, I'm talking Hardy Boys, I'm talking EC3, I'm talking Drew Galloway, and you focus on them while also bringing in some of that new West Coast talent, some of the younger guys that are existing in the indies on the East Coast, and you create compelling wrestling, then you will, at the very least, get the Ring of Honor crowd and the indie smarks and the NXT fans to pay attention to you. And that's all you need to create a buzz are these internet nerds that love wrestling. If you put on a wrestling-heavy show in this day and age with guys that can actually work, and you provide a little bit of something for everybody. There's a little bit of comedy, but it's not super prevalent. There's a little bit of hardcore, but it's not super prevalent. There's tag team division, there's a women's division, there's the X division, and there's our title division. There's enough to fill 2 hours to make it compelling. And you put 14 or 15 minute matches on TV and not always in the main event spot.
Yeah. I mean, to me, the keys are not only a name change, you have to find who your identity is. They have to find an identity. And if it's that direction that you're talking about, then they got to do that. But these, whether, you know, you're bringing in the older wrestlers, they try to be WWE. They're not going to be at that level.
For me, that's what I hate about TNA. And what I've always hated about TNA is it's always about these retreads. Mm-hmm. And for me, I don't consider EC3 a retread. That's a dude that just didn't connect in Florida, got released, and then came here. You know what I mean? But I also, I would have my eye out for the guys that you know are going to get purged out of the E. You know what I mean? That really could do something for you. And, and it's guys, in my opinion, like Adam Rose, that need to get out from underneath.
Boy, took this, a hit right there. 60-day suspension.
It's a second drug violation, man. Him and that idiot from the Ascension. Look, man, you know, I'm not anti-drugs. I'm not pro-drugs. I'm just simply a realist. And if my job says I'm going to test your piss randomly all the time, guess what I'm not going to do? Drugs.
But here's the weird thing about that, and I heard this, I want to say Meltzer was talking about it or something, not to give him a shout out, but he was talking about how there hasn't been any type of drug bust pop on, that's happened in a long time.
And it's because all your users are gone, dude.
No, but there was a report that came out saying right around the same with the UFC that something with the government came down and they were asking, and then all of a sudden two guys show up positive. And just how weird it looks that before nobody was was testing positive, and now all of a sudden, we're following protocol. Here's two guys, and they get suspended.
Well, and look who they threw under the bus.
Exactly, it's no big players. So I mean, it does take away from two different teams.
It doesn't though, because the Ascension was on the verge of getting either released or sent back down, and Adam Rose was probably also.
Did they address that with Social Outcasts?
What's that? No.
Rose gone? They just, nothing.
Just like it didn't exist.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens with
They just
TNA.
Stick the other dude from the Ascension in with them.
I do want to, before we wrap up, I do want to give one shout out for getting busted on from last week's podcast. I got a text from my boy Greg in L.A. He goes, dude, you never heard of Paul Roma? ... Jabroni. So I apologize to all those people out there.
You don't have to apologize to Paul
Roma. I will do research and watch some matches of Paul Roma. Dixon's going to give me some. No, he sucks.
Paul Roma. This is like that black spot on the Four Horsemen legacy that I just wish would somehow get erased from history. Paul Roma at his best was one half of a jobber tag team in the WWF called the Young Stallions with Jim Powers.
Okay.
And then ended up in WCW and somehow, some way, ended up in the Horsemen out of the blue with no real reason, no lead up to it, nothing. It's just Paul Roma's the fourth Horseman. I think like everybody else had like diarrhea or something that day and couldn't work, and it was like,
I literally have no idea what
this guy. At least he's been on TV. Paul Roma, you're the fourth Horseman for a few weeks.
I have no idea what this guy looks like. Like, I have none. I mean, I probably should have Googled it.
You ever watch Laverne and Shirley? Laverne and Shirley when you were a kid?
Short one or tall one?
No. Carmine, the big ragu. The best friend that worked.
Oh, yeah.
At the bowling alley?
Yeah.
Imagine him as, like, Seth Rollins' body now. Like he was, I mean, the upside of Paul Roma was he was a solid little worker with a killer dropkick, was a great tag team wrestler. He had power and glory with Hercules.
Boys? with Flair and those guys?
I don't know that he ever really spent any time around Flair. I don't know that he ever really spent any time around Arn Anderson or Tully Blanchard. There's no way he was friends with Barry Windham because he replaced Barry Windham in The Horsemen.
Yeah.
So, like, it's this weird thing of how did Paul Roma ever end up in The Horsemen? I think that's a question for Ole Anderson because he was the guy that was booking WCW at the time.
We should do some research on this. Any listeners out there got any inside information?
If anybody knows why on earth Paul Roma was inserted into The Four Horsemen, please hit us up.
Hit us up.
I Hate Dixon on Instagram.
I am at VMan12 at Twitter. Do us a favor. Subscribe, download, like, and iTunes. Rate us so the podcasts can rise in the list of wrestling and sports entertainment. And
no, it's wrestling, bro.
It's wrestling, but in the category in iTunes, it's sports/entertainment.
Oh, okay.
So, and that way, we want to rise, man. So subscribe, download, rate it, and then follow us. And then, yeah, let us know. And next week. The draft.
Yeah, we're going to do like a little quick supplemental draft. Jay's going to wear extra tight pants. It'll be a great
time. Extra tight pants.
So until next week, this has been The B Show, a wrestling podcast. Bye.